Welcome, everybody. This is the fourth Expanded Budget Committee meeting for the Tompkins County Legislature, meeting about the 2021 budget. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. I do have just a couple of quick announcements. Jason, Mike Lane, and I met with officials at TC3 this morning to go over some new news about their budget, in particular about state changes in state funding. Substitute changes with cuts. I mean, changes is a euphemism, right? So we will be talking. We do need to have a regular budget committee meeting on Monday. Of course, everybody's invited, but this will be about the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, a special meeting 3 o'clock on Monday. We'll be considering a resolution. Jason will present to us. And we have talked about that a little bit, but we'll get more information by the end of the week. So please put into your calendars 3 o'clock on Monday for Budget, Capital, and Personnel. And next Wednesday is our public forum on our budget. I wanted to see if Dominic is with us to confirm what time we're planning that. There's been a little bit of confusion. Or Jason, have you
Hey, all right, I'm here.
Okay. Do you have us in down for 7 or 7:30 or what time?
I had us down for earlier, though I think 7 might work. Let me get back to you in an email thread so we can pick the exact time, and then we'll email it out to the group, and I'll also be sure to share thoroughly online.
Great. Thank you. We are looking for an evening, and 7 o'clock I think is the time that we have done it in the past. So thank you very much, Dominic. That's next Wednesday. And, of course, we're already getting comments in on via email. And on Tuesday, we have the legislature meeting, and people will be able to make public comment at that time as well. So that's what I have. Jason, do you have any other announcements besides the TC3 issue?
I mean, the TC3 issue is a difficult one. It's very complex. There's a bunch of different moving parts that aren't related other than it causes financial strain on TC3. So I should be getting, I'm just firing off an email to Bill now to remind him to send me a summary of stuff. I'll send it out to you, and then we'll go from there and figure out what to do next.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Jason. And, oh, Drew Brayman was also in the meeting. Appreciate his taking the time for it as well this morning. All right. With that, our first department for tonight is District Attorney Matt Van Houten. Welcome.
Thank you, Martha.
And that, folks, that is on page 56 in section 4 for you.
So in following the direction I was given, I've limited my presentation to 10 slides, one of which is the introductory slide. So it's pretty condensed, but happy to answer any questions at any time. Interrupt me, please. So with that, I'm going to share my screen and pull up the presentation.
Looks good.
Everybody can see it?
Yeah.
Good. There we go. Recommended budget. These are the prepared slides from the county administrator's office. I will say that our budget has always been in the DA's office about 95% plus personnel related. We have a very lean budget overall. We have very few expenses that aren't personnel related. Even some of the operating expenses are related to paying independent contractors, grand jury reporters, and so we're still keeping that trend to be true, and our budget, our proposed budget, is very lean in that respect. We have eliminated one full-time position as part of our attempt to cut costs as much as possible. That is our administrative assistant position. She was furloughed. She's a receptionist. She was furloughed at the beginning of COVID, and we could have brought her back, but I made the decision not to in the interest of trying to save funds. We were able to figure out a way to make it work, especially given, you know, the reduced traffic in our office since COVID started. So that's something that I've decided we can live without. We will miss her, and she does a lot for us, but just trying to be as frugal and cost conscious as possible, that position has been eliminated. There are really three OTRs. There were more, and the county administrator consolidated them into three categories. Two are people, and one is some of the operating expenses that we need to maintain to operate every day here. The two individuals, the two staff members, one is the third part-time confidential investigator. That's a person that we added last year in order to be able to comply with the discovery reform. It's somebody that we have relied on very heavily this year in order to be able to comply with the discovery reforms. He's going to be even more important going into 2021 because the state police will be adding body-worn camera video in 2021, and that's going to be about a 30% increase in that amount of that evidence that we have to collect, download, and provide to the defense attorneys. It's very time-consuming. It's very data-consuming. You probably remember we needed our own dedicated internet network in order to be able to not shut down the county bandwidth. So that's something that, you know, as we get more and more back to normal in terms of the caseload, is incredibly important position for us to be able to comply with our obligations in 2020 and going forward with discovery reform and how that's shaping up. We are doing a very good job, I think, of being compliant with our discovery obligations. We are using the software that New York State Prosecutors Training Institute provides to us for a cost. I'm told that cost is extremely low. It's a very good bargain, but it still does cost us money, $110 per terabyte of data per month. But that's a really efficient way of providing evidence digitally to defense attorneys, and we've been using that very well, I think, in 2020. But those obligations are going to go up in 2021. The other OTR person position is an assistant DA. Since January 1st of 2020, we have been operating with one fewer attorneys in the office. We were scraping by for the first few months, and then COVID hit. But as we resume operations, it's becoming more and more clear that we really need that person to be able to fully participate in the ATIs. And if you recall, that was the argument that we made back in 2017 when I was asking for that additional attorney. That would bring us from 8 back to 9 attorneys in the office. And that attorney is really critical for us to be everywhere we need to be to participate in the incarceration that I'll talk about in a little bit further in the presentation. So just some of the major influences that we've had to deal with and some of the things that are happening in the world, police reform. There's going to be a lot happening, I think, in police reform going into 2021, and I intend to be a big part of that. Some of it's already affecting us in the sense that we have to do more digging and disclose more information as far as police personnel files. So I've been spending more time working on that, trying to make sure that we're protecting the confidential information of police officers, but also meeting our obligations to disclose anything that could be possibly relevant to a criminal case. Impeachment material specifically is what it's called. It's anything that could be used to cross-examine a police officer about their credibility or their trustworthiness as a witness. So that's a big factor that's just starting to ramp up in 2020 and 21. Part of that is the implementation of body-worn camera video for the state police. And so those are two big parts of police reform that are going to affect our office. Obviously, discovery reform is continuing. That law is still on the books, and we are settling into a process of being able to comply with those obligations, but they are significant. We just had several really big cases that happened all on the same weekend about 6 weeks ago. And one of them was a home invasion where there were three co-defendants, and we have turned over literally thousands and thousands of documents in that case. Surveillance videos, photographs, documents relating to the investigation. It's a massive task, and thank God we've had the three investigators to be able to comply with that. And such a big case is really important to be able to comply so that we don't run into problems prosecuting those cases. I list bail reform only because it is something that takes time for us. It was implemented and then rolled back a little bit. So we spent a lot of time making sure that we knew exactly what the law was and how to argue effectively for when we needed to argue about bail, which is still something we do very sparingly and very rarely. But it is something that is an impact on our office and the community. The third county court judge, I'll skip, everybody knows how COVID has affected everybody. So I won't talk about that. Bless you, Jason. The third county court judge, will affect us going into, the future because we will have more trials. We will have more cases going to trial quickly or more quickly, because there will be more court dates, which I think is a great thing. I've always been an advocate for that third judge position. But it also puts the pressure on us. You know, we've got more trials. That's more work for us. But it's a good thing. So here's where we get to, additional ATIs that I hope will be implemented, in the near future. We've talked about, the city wellness and recovery court. There's going to be a county, wellness and recovery court, hopefully before 2021. I helped out with the grant application for, some of the expenses for that, but that would include, lower level nonviolent felonies being put into a mental health court, which is another specialty court, another court that diverts people from jail, another court that diverts people specifically with regard to the county wellness and recovery court from being sent to a mental institution for a 7:30 examination. Those examinations cost us, being placed in a mental health institution as a result of that order costs us about $1,000 a day. That is 100% the county's cost. So we ask for that very sparingly, but having a county mental health court would be a great alternative to minimize the number of times that we actually even have to use that process. Raise the age just creates another amount of administrative work for juvenile cases. Just going back to the wellness and recovery, when I first asked for the additional ADA in 2017 to meet our obligations with the specialty courts, wellness and recovery court didn't even exist. So we were spread thin trying to be everywhere we needed to be for city treatment court, felony treatment court. Those were really spreading us thin in addition to integrated domestic violence court, sex offender compliance court. Adding wellness and recovery court was a huge additional time demand for our attorneys. And having a felony wellness and recovery court will be the same, will have the same effect. And then I keep talking about LEAD. One of these days we're actually going to implement LEAD. And I think it's really something we need, something we can use, something that will divert many people away from the criminal justice system before they're even in court. So I'm hoping that we eventually will implement that, and that will require more attorney time to be able to participate in that. So right now we have, 8 attorneys, including myself. The position that I'm hoping to fill is an ADA level 1, so an entry level position. And I will, go to the ends of the earth to, have a diverse candidate pool. And that is something I've talked about with Jason. I've talked about it with the new, Chief Equity and Diversity Officer, with HR. I will stop at nothing to have a diverse candidate pool for that position. It's something that the community has clearly spoken out that they want. I think it's critical for us to do that and, to fill that position. I will, really put a lot of time into that and hope to be able to fill that position. But that's a position that we absolutely need, to be everywhere we need to be. Wellness and Recovery Court is a full day of team meetings, full day of court, in addition to that attorney's regular, court appearances. It's just literally we can't be everywhere we need to be, with the number of attorneys we have now. So I'm sure you've heard this about a million times already, but it bears repeating that a budget is a reflection of the community's morals. Going back, I put this information up in 2017 about the national standard for number of prosecutors per capita. The national standard is generally 1 per 10,000 residents. If we're fully staffed with the 9 attorneys, we're still at 1 per 11,500. If we have 8 attorneys, we're at 1 per 13,000, approximately, people in the county. And that's significant because if we really want to be a leader in New York State for alternatives to incarceration, we need to spend the money and put the time in, to those programs. And I think, you know, it's morally right, but it's also, it's a fiscally, correct strategy to take. And you could see that by the jail population. It's in the low to mid 30s consistently this year. It was up in the 40s for a little while, but it's last time I checked, it was 35. It was 32 the week before. That means something. It means that our ATIs are working, and it also means that we're spending less money on incarcerating people. And that translates to a savings to the county. So both morally and fiscally, it's the right thing to do, to spend this money on that 9th prosecutor. This is another breakdown of how the specialty courts take up our attorney time. Felony treatment court, city treatment court, IDV court is 1 ADA, but it really should be 2, because there's so much volume in domestic violence cases and they're so difficult, demanding of one's time. Sex offender court, wellness and recovery court, we talked about those things. And then the other, things that relate to ATIs and our community criminal justice system. I want to participate in the reinventing public safety process. I participate in CJATI, which I think is really critical and is a great group of people that really makes a difference in our community. I'm also on the JEDI committee, which I also think is really valuable and important for me as the DA to be part of that process. But all those things take time that are not spent traditionally litigating cases. So this slide is actually not true. In a traditional prosecution, the defendant may plead guilty or may be found guilty after a trial, and there might be one more appearance for a sentencing, and then we move on and forget about them. But that's, if they are sentenced to jail or even probation, that is more expensive for us than if we spend the time. And the time with ATIs is just getting started when someone is sentenced or someone is put into an alternative to incarceration specialty court. Once someone's in that court, it's typically with a plea, but they're not sentenced yet. And from there, it's up to 2 years of meetings, regular meetings and team meetings and follow through email correspondence and court appearances and compliance to make sure that person is engaging in the treatment court and becoming successful. And that is something that the DA's office has to be part of. We have to have a voice in that process. We have to be engaged in that process, and we are, but it's so much more time for us, but I think it's so much more valuable for us and the community to be doing that as opposed to just closing the book on these individuals with a sentence of jail or a sentence of something else. This is just a quick breakdown of our support staff. We have the three confidential investigators. They're a critical liaison between the law enforcement agencies and my office. They have the ability to look at a case and say, hey, you need to do ABC, and they have credibility within the law enforcement agent community because they come from the main law enforcement agencies in the community, and they're critical to our compliance with discovery when they track down the discovery that we need to provide to defense attorneys in a timely manner. The paralegals are similarly important in terms of organizing and dispersing and documenting. And another thing that we'll need to do as far as going into 2021, and I want to do sooner, is start putting out more demographic information. We'll be required to do that through the courts in 21, but I'm not sure that the courts know how they're going to do it, or that they will be able to do it in a way that is really giving us meaningful data that we can use. So I want to do it in my office too, but it's going to be really difficult to do that with our current staff. But I'm going to have to figure out a way to do it because we need to do that. We need to be looking at the demographics of who's being diverted, who is being incarcerated, and be able to explain why those numbers are what they are. And I mentioned that our receptionist was furloughed. So that's a quick breakdown of the DA's office and my proposed budget. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Matt. Before you turn the slides off, could you go back a couple, three slides? Keep going. That one. No. With a quote. I can't remember if it's which way. With a quote where you said this is traditional versus ATI. Oh. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Your presentation will live on our budget website. I don't think the audio is included, but I think the slides are. I would recommend that you put like a little knot in there. Or at least express what you actually mean to say so that people don't read that and think that's actually what you think. Just a little editorial comment. So.
Okay, thank you. That's a good suggestion.
Okay, thank you. Shauna Black, first question.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for your presentation. I was wondering, I know I was actually on public safety 2 years ago, and one of the compelling reasons to add ADAs during that time was that we had many, many murder trials, and you had said that that was taking a lot of your time and a lot of your staff's time. And then last year we had bell reform, and that was a big concern, and we really didn't know what we were looking at in terms of your staffing needs, or your investigators' needs. And I was wondering, is there any way to actually see a breakdown of the cases that you've had? I know you can't go into specifics, but see a number of the cases that you've had over like the past 3 years? Because I'd like to see if there's some type of correlation between the staffing needs and the actual cases that are coming through your door.
I mean, I can give you numbers. And, you know, numbers only tell you so much. I mean, one case might involve spending 500 hours.
Yeah, no, and I understand that.
So it's really, I am very hesitant to use numbers. I never use numbers, in terms of, you know, saying, hey, I got 100% conviction rate, or we've prosecuted this many cases. I can certainly show you the numbers. They have gone down a little bit in terms of the volume. And, you know, there's always, factors that influence, for example, COVID. There were a lot fewer cases for a little while in COVID. It's picking back up now. One weekend, about 6 weeks ago, we had, you know, a home invasion where there was a shootout in someone's kitchen. We had a really terrible stabbing that was almost a homicide. And we had 3 armed robberies, and then 3 more armed robberies that happened during the week prior to that. So it's so unpredictable. But all of those now have really slammed us, right now. You know, we would love to be bored, but that's never happened since I've been in office. I mean, I can certainly give some numbers. I gave some numbers to Jason, but I hesitate to put them in, this presentation because I just don't think that they mean much, in terms of, you know, measuring how much work and how hard we're working in the office.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Ann Corman.
Thanks, Martha, and thanks, Matt, for your presentation. I had a couple of questions. One was regarding the person who you said their position was eliminated. Were they offered anything else in the county, or were they laid off?
My understanding is that she was offered a position with another county department. I don't know the status of whether she accepted that, but I do know that she was one of the employees who was offered another position.
Okay, thank you. And you said there's going to be more to process in regards to the body cams. So is that just because I'm not sure if you meant because New York State is getting them or other municipalities around the county are getting them?
Well, up until even right now, the New York State Police do not use body cameras, and they never have, but they have been directed to start using them in 2021. So when we look at our caseload, it's probably about 30% of the cases coming from IPD, Ithaca Police Department, 30% coming from the sheriff, 30% coming from the state police, and 10% from other agencies, the local municipalities. Those are rough numbers, but given that we didn't have to collect body-worn camera video from the state police up till now, and we will have to do that in 2021. We're going to be using so much more bandwidth, and the time associated with that collection process is going to increase significantly.
Thank you. I'm glad more agencies are going towards using body cams.
We love it. I think it's fantastic. It's really a valuable tool for showing what really happened.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you, Matt. I don't see any other questions.
Martha?
Oh, Mike. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Thanks. Matt, we're getting a lot of feedback about the community outreach worker position in downtown Ithaca. Does your department interact with that position in any way? Does it help us keep people out of jail, or isn't it something that that you're observing?
Well, I think she is kind of like the closest thing we have to lead right now. But we're not formally involved with her or in any kind of regular way. I do see her and see some of the work that she does, and I think she's a really valuable part of the community. And I do think that she makes a difference in terms of the people coming into the criminal justice system, connecting them to services. So I personally believe that's an expense that is well spent.
Thank you.
This question, like Annie asked one of my questions. I also wanted to know the confidential investigator is a one-time request and funded at one time. I see we funded this. It first became effective this year, January 2020. So that was a 3-year one-time request. Is that right?
That's right. It was going to be a target, and then it was converted by amendment last year to a 3-1-year renewal item.
Okay, and it sounds like you feel very much that you really need that position.
Absolutely. You know, just to be able to comply with our discovery obligations, it's critical for us to have him.
Okay. So I'm sure we'll be looking at this next year as well. You know, I suppose to consider making that a target position.
I hope so.
Jason, you're warned. Anything else for the district attorney? All right, thanks very much. Appreciate that. And I was watching the clock because I know Lance is following you, so he would, you know, not be happy if you took up his time.
Oh, he wouldn't mind.
No, he can have all our time. I'll just... I'll go have a milkshake or something while he's talking.
Well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate your time and your attention. So I will see you soon.
Thanks very much, Matt, and welcome, Lance. Great to have you and have Julie here, too.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the assigned counsel budget presentation. Our major influences probably are, no surprise, COVID-19 and criminal justice reform. I think you'll see our 2021 budget, here it comes, request. You'll see is a reduction of about 12.6% from 2020.
All right, it starts on page 8 in section 4 while you're...
There it is. 1.846426, you see, is our total recommended for this year. It's almost a 12.7% reduction. That's a reduction in office expenditures, and you'll see a significant reduction in mandated representation costs. In terms of staffing... You'll see we remain constant at 6 employees in the department. You see 5.57 because one employee is split between Tompkins County and Schuyler County. So therefore you see the Tompkins County share of that is the 5.57. Of those 6 employees, 3 are funded 100% by state grants in contracts. Of the remaining 3, both my position and that of the program coordinator are also partially funded by state money. You'll see we are and go through that. We have 1 OTR, which is to return my position back to 40 hours. When we were filing our office costs, the only way to get to the 12% to do that was to deal with staff hours. Of the 3 employees that are covered by county costs, 2 are at retirement age, so it was unacceptable to me to cut their hours given the permanent impact that that would have on the retirement moving forward. So we cut, you know, cut my hours to achieve the 12%, and then we were asked to submit the OTR to bring me back to 40 hours, so I don't get to sit on the beach. We've done that. When we did the OTR, when you look at that in the budget book, you'll see administration, and we discovered it's actually going to be a lower number than the listed OTR. The actual number will be about $23,688. I know Kevin has put a housekeeping amendment on the list of amendments to right-size that OTR for the first voting meeting of the legislature. You'll see
in
yes, what?
Why would that be lower?
We may have done a miscalculation on this end in doing that. The correct number would be the 23,688 that you're going to see on that. You'll see the major and significant reduction in our costs is due to the reduction in mandated representation costs. This is actually coming solely from the criminal side. We're reducing our mandated representation costs by $225,000 for 2021. While the family court cases, I think you're going to see that slide. There you go. That's the, you see our criminal court caseload for the last 3 years. The gray line is 2020, and with the numbers, the monthly numbers, you see there as well. Our family court numbers are going to stay consistent in terms of the representation. The reason we're doing the criminal court reduction is we've had a significant reduction in cases. Actually, beginning about September 2019, I can update you. Look, today we had 59 criminal cases for September and 50 family court cases for September. We expect that reduction in criminal caseload to continue to some extent in 2021, and hence the reduction in spending on that line. And, you know, it very well may be by the 2022 budget, we're seeing a return to the historic norm. But we'll, you know, that'll be determined the next time we talk budget.
Are you all set, Lance? Is that your presentation? Lance? Did we lose Lance?
I think the camera that Matt got him was a lemon.
and the microphone, I guess.
I think Matt did that on purpose.
I think he throttled down his megabytes.
I think he's still here,
he's absolutely
here.
Milkshakes.
He's still here. But
he's
just
on
wanted,
the beach.
Those are the two slides that we had to show you. And I think the one thing that he wanted to say is how we handle cases. A person comes in with four cases and or four different charges, but that is considered one case. So that's probably what he was going to say. But I'm sure that he's trying to get back on.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thanks very much, Julia. I looked down to take some notes. I looked up. He was gone. All right. I see Rich's hand. So let's go to questions and we'll let
Julia, you may be able to answer this one. Mm-hmm. On page 12, it's in the OTR, it's saying 35 hours to 40. But in the list of employees, it was at 0.75 up to full-time. Should that be 30 rather than 35?
That's where the mistake is. I did it at 30 and it should be 35. That's my error.
Wait, it should be 35?
It should be going from 35 to 40, and I calculated the decrease at 30 hours. I put him down to 30 hours. It should be going from 35 to 40.
But that's not quarter time, so of his time, so I don't understand that.
It's not quarter time. We did that so that he, so that we could meet the 12%, and that was the only way that we could do it based upon the other two myself included, employees who were going to retire.
Rich, you're comparing the table on page 9 where it's shown as three quarters time.
The three quarters of time is for the employee from Schuyler. She spends three quarter time here and then the other time over in Schuyler.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Julia. Are there any other questions for Lance or Julia? Lance, you're back? Let's see the little box there. I do have a question. Remind us how much time we have in, or how many employees in Schuyler?
We only have the one, and then Lance and I go over there part-time, but we only have the one administrative assistant, 3, over there.
Okay. And do I understand then that they're reducing the mandated criminal caseload is going down? This is kind of the benefit of seeing that ATIs are working. We have fewer people in the system. Is that evidence of that?
That's one of the things that we've discussed. I mean, because it's such an anomaly year with COVID, we really don't know. We want to think that it's because of all your efforts in the ATI programs. But we just don't know. We just won't really know until next year what it is. But we do think that is a heavy part of it.
All right. Anyone else have questions? Well, keep up the great work. It's such an important program, and we really appreciate all that you do. And Julia, not to put you on the spot, but were you one of the retirements that Lance mentioned?
Yeah, she was. It's Lance. Sarah, we had a technical issue. She was. At that point, that was one of them. And I think just to follow up on your question, correct, COVID has disrupted the numbers so much. It's hard to say, looking at the numbers, because they started in about September 2019. It may be that ATIs are having an influence, criminal justice reform, changes in like marijuana law and so forth. But we can't say, as Julia said, until by the end of 2021, we may have a better idea. We can give you an idea. My sense is probably you'd expect that, but COVID has so disrupted the numbers that I can't guarantee you that.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We definitely appreciate this side of the system and appreciate all that you're doing for folks.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we'll go to probation and community justice. In your book, that's page 153 in section 4. And I'm looking for Dan Cornell. Who's here from probation?
I don't see anyone here for probation, Martha, right now.
Okay.
I also want to jump to Brian.
Okay. And Kathy or Kevin or somebody could ping Dan. We are early here, so he may be expecting to show up in a few minutes from now. So, Brian Robinson, welcome. So, emergency response, and now I'll send you folks to page 61 in section 4. Brian, hello, Brian.
Yep. We're here. We're trying to get the screen up.
I can't do the video. It won't let me.
Why?
I don't know. It won't let me do video.
All right. I'll tap Dan's here and say emergency response has three OTs.
Sure.
There you are.
We're here. We're trying to share the screen.
Okay.
On that new slide.
All right. Good.
Okay, and we're done.
No, you just started.
In our recommended budget, as we started with the mandate for a negative 12 budget, we did the math, and it equated to $327,000 within our budget. And that's what was submitted, was a negative 12. You'll see a negative 9.71. And I believe, Jason can correct me if I'm wrong, but the lion's share of that was, and as you recall, a couple of years ago, given the backlog of a lot of major projects that we had within DOOR, we needed to increase the capital project amount in the budget to be able to do some of those much-needed updates. So for last year and again this year, an additional $50,000 was put into that account, and that's what brings it down to the 9.71. But I swear to you, we submitted one that that was within the negative 12. If you'll, yeah. I do want to take a few minutes to explain to you the FTEs and who those folks are and how they relate to operations here. You'll see there's a change. There's four positions out of 32 in a public safety 24/7 operation. That's really tricky to do. But we were able to do it by some that admittedly should probably be restored at some point. But we went ahead and tried to do the best we could for the good of the organization. So for next year, we will be down one dispatcher, just a regular emergency service dispatcher, from 16 to 15. And that is cutting it close. As long as we do not have someone that leaves our employment or long-term disabilities, things of that nature, it should work. If, like last year at this time, we had four people in training at this time last year. That affects other parts of the budget, namely overtime, because you've got to fill those positions around the clock, and we're hopeful that that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened this year, except for one that moved out of state. So as long as that remains constant, we should be okay. The professional development coordinator, and I should mention that both of these two were vacant at the time of when COVID hit. And so they, because of the hiring freeze, they stayed vacant, and we have rolled them into the 2021 budget. The professional development coordinator is the number two person in the supervisory role within the dispatch center. They're responsible for a lot, including training, recruitment, certifications, so on and so forth. The communications center manager is right now doing double duty. They're doing the manager position and the professional development coordinator position, as well as taking up additional work that's mandated by Discovery. So I'm not sure how he does it. I check with him every day. He seems to be doing okay, but he has got a tremendous amount on his plate, and that would be a position that we would have to look to restore once things get a bit better. Next is a E911 program specialist. This position is kind of unique to Tompkins County. We are the only county left that actually has a live person that performs this job. She was scheduled to retire in the middle of next year anyway, so she has opted for the early retirement. And quite frankly, the cost savings from that, a good part of that is going to be eaten up by an additional service contract with Verizon to basically perform the same function. But we did not intend on hiring a person back once she left anyway. We're the only center in the state that does not use an automated monthly download to verify addresses, phone numbers, et cetera. And we will be doing that beginning the 1st of January. The systems manager, he also took an early retirement. He is in the process right now of doing some succession training for the person that we hope fills his position. That cannot possibly be done in a couple of months. Level of knowledge that needs to be passed on just cannot do that. He is one of the two that we are proposing with an OTR to come back in a halftime basis for next year for that succession training and to work on a very large project. It's actually the backup dispatch center project, which you folks have heard enough from me on that to know that's vital to this operation, and we are making some headway on that, and more to come on that, but that one will be crucial, as well as last year there was a one-time for an assistant director for project management. Fortunately, we had him. Last year, our department as a whole initiated and completed, I believe it was 48 projects. I hesitate to say, but compared to years past, that was very much multiples of the type. They were long overdue, and they got done, and in large part through their project coordination. The same project coordinator is playing the lead role right now with the planning of the backup center, a very, very large project. And that, too, is the subject of an OTR that we'll cover here in a second. I will say that in our negative 12 budget that we submitted, these last two positions, the systems manager and the assistant director for project coordination, on a halftime basis, were in the negative 12 budget. However, it was thought that because they are going to be here for not past next year, that they should be moved out of the target budget and into basically one time or RT or OR.
OTR.
OTR, sorry. And speaking of OTRs, those are the number one and number two are the two positions that I just spoke about. They're there. And the third OTR has to do with the GIS consolidation. Those are basically
movement of contracts out of our budget and into ITS budget for GIS.
They're service contracts. I believe there's four of them. They go. So that's it. We'll certainly answer any questions that anyone would have.
Thank you very much, Brian. And is that Jessica?
Yes, yes.
Hello.
Hi. You're really, really tiny on our screen. So, welcome. Sean Black.
Hi. Thank you very much. I was wondering, the project manager position, that was supposed to be a temporary role that I know we hired from within. Why do we keep renewing that position if it was supposed to be set up as temporary?
This next year, that position is going away in June, and we have a project timeline for the backup center to it's aggressive, I will admit that, but we have a timeline for that project to be shovel ready by the end of June.
I guess my question is, we hired this person specifically for this one project last year with the whole idea that the next time we have a project that we would be opening up the position and hiring a person using the application process. And so I'm wondering, I mean, obviously we keep having, you know, different projects in our county. And, you know, I don't want this to be a program manager position that gets filled by this person that was supposed to be temporary, you know, in last year.
So this person has, well, number one, we've started this planning process for the backup center already, but this person has intimate knowledge of our systems, the same systems that Cornell uses, and a variety of other things that if we did not have this person would severely jeopardize this project.
I would have had some type of interview process, you know, and some type of, you know, and that person have gone through the process, because I don't think that happened.
This is not a new person. It's just keeping this person on who's going to be retiring, keeping them on for a half a year.
Yes.
So it's not a new position. It's extending the person who had been planning to retire.
Yep. Yep.
So there's, okay, so it's not a new slot, Shauna. So I see Amanda and then Deborah.
Thank you. I am a little bit still confused about the succession planning position. So somebody is retiring at the end of this year, but they're not really retiring because you're proposing that they stay on in the halftime position.
Yes, they have taken advantage of the retirement. He was going to retire at the end of last or next year. We really need him for two things. We need him to show his role to another person within the organization that we want to elevate to his position at some point. He's a systems manager, so hopefully you've taken a tour up here or something like that. There is a multitude of systems that person manages. He's been, for the past several months even, he's been working with this other position to try to bring him up to speed. It's not possible in that shorter period of time. So that's, call it half of the reason why we need this position. The other half is that that backup center project as well.
So the two OTRs, OTR 66 and 67, are for this one person who's retiring?
No.
Okay.
Two different people.
Okay. So I understand the need for succession planning. I guess I'm caught up on the fact that he's taking the early retirement, but he's not retiring. How does that work? I mean, like, I don't know all the details of the benefits of the early retirement, but he's not retiring.
He'll take the early retirement and then come back at halftime where the benefits are not there for the halftime position like they would be for a full-time position.
So no fringes for a re-employed annuitant?
I think it's 20 hours a week.
Jason, can you weigh in on this a little bit, if there's confusion about the early retirement program?
So the one position is similar to what we've done in the past, where folks have retired and we have some level of succession or some level of knowledge transfer and overlap. That position is slotted to be a part-time, a one-time shot this next year on a part-time basis, 20 hours a week for that individual. And they'll be working with the person that will be filling their role. And in fact, it's actually an elimination of one position. That individual will train this one person whose position will not be filled after that. That's the one issue. The other one is the OTR till June. That individual worked on the microwave project this year that was implemented, which was about a $1.8 million project, as well as assisted with the start of the review and hopefully will ultimately be the development of an implementation plan of a backup dispatch center. We'll be coming to public safety next month in October to talk a little bit more about that. That is an OTR for a continuation for just the next 6 months, after which that one will end as well. So one will end mid-year. The other one will end at the end of this year. The one at the end of this year is about a really knowledge transfer and help with succession for them to leave.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you, Jason. Deborah.
Okay, thank you. Nice to see you, Brian. I noticed you've got a $625,000 budget item under other. I just think that $625,000 is a large enough sum of money that maybe a little more explanation would be in order.
Can you point me to the page?
Yeah, it's on page 61. Under your consolidated budget, other target for 2021 and recommended, $625,118. And if you turn to page 64, it looks like $623,433 of that is under emergency communications.
So the 623,433 is a combination that's under our that's under emergency communications. Part of that is our renewal and replacement costs, $573,965. That's part of that's where that extra $50,000 has been going to, so that in the event that grant money does not come through, that we have the ability to pay for maintenance contracts and the ability to replace stuff that breaks on a fairly regular basis. We need to be able to have that money to replace things that break and all that. And the other about $30,000 is for insurance that was transferred to us, I believe, for the 2020 budget.
So, Deborah, this account, we refer to it as an R&R account, which is renewal and replacement. This is the account that we didn't borrow any money. We paid out of this account the $1.8 million for the microwave upgrade here. It was a couple of years' worth to save up to pay for that project. Now we have coming right behind it another, I'm going to say, much larger backup center project that instead of it going out to bond, it would still go out to bond, but our department would make those payments out of this renewal and replacement account to pay for the project, which is going to be probably, well, I'd hate to say because we're in the development of it right now, but certainly a few million dollars for that project alone.
So this is like debt service?
Yeah. Go ahead, Jason.
I can add a little bit to it, Deborah. If you look back on your line back in the 2019 actual, you'll see under other finance, 493965. So this is a recoding into that other category. Essentially what this is that we get about between 650 and 700,000 of a state grant annually. It's called interoperable communications grant that's intended to go to municipalities to help build up their interoperable systems. And in past years, we coded it under a different expense line. This goes into essentially what we'll call a capital reserve. And as that builds up over time, we can use it for capital expenditures. The reason it's showing up in a different line under this year is because we changed it from what you're seeing as other finance to other. And I think it first came in 2017, so it really wasn't coded properly until 2019. The offset to it is under state aid. You'll see there's about a $700,000 line there. That's where most of it comes in from the revenue side. So what happens is when we get the money in, we then put it into a reserve, and then we pay for certain projects out of the reserve. This $1.8 million project that we just completed this year, the microwave upgrade, was several years of accumulated, the past two or three years of accumulated balance. What will most likely happen, and this is reflected in the capital plan, is let's say, for example, we decide to do a backup dispatch center that costs X amount of dollars. If we end up bonding it, you would have the debt service, and you would pay debt service with a portion of this state aid. It's really the reason it's sticking out is because it's in a different line this year. We just got this revenue a few years ago, and we're still, you know, we had probably one more meeting than we needed, Brian, about how to properly code it. But that's why you see it distinctly differently than in 2019.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. But I miss those meetings.
Yeah, I'm sure you miss them. Rick misses them too. Rick and Kevin and you and I.
Are there any other questions for Brian and Jessica? Could you go through the FTEs again for me? Because Doer is one of those where you feel like there's a baseline number of staff that if you don't have that, like, things really fall apart. So to see the FTE, the bottom line on the FTEs to go from 32 in this year's budget to 28, I like, yikes, that's a big drop. And I wanted to just really understand what the transitions are here. I get one of them is the GIS person, right?
Yep.
Yep.
So that person's, that function that, you know, is, and that target amount is moving over to ITS.
Yep.
That's one.
Another one is we presently have 16, we're slotted for 16 dispatchers.
Mm-hmm.
That number has dropped to 15. A professional development coordinator, the person that does the recruiting, training, certifications, ideally that person would be doing the discovery duties that are needed for the district attorney's office. Right now, all of that stuff is wrapped up under the communications center manager, which I said I have no idea how he does all that he does. It's not an ideal situation, but these aren't ideal times for anyone. So we went ahead and did that.
It's been vacant for at least 6 months, if not more.
Yeah.
So.
And it was one that was vacant at the time COVID hit, and we had a hiring freeze, and so we just decided to roll that into next year. Some of this is and the staff has been kind of forewarned that, hey, if someone cries foul, we're going to have to come up with a plan B. And we've actually already come up with a few ways to take the load off from some people that are having to do excess duties, let's call it. It's our attempt at trying to be a good sport, and but make no mistake, it is a public safety department, and we're cognizant of that. So it's a balancing act. The other two positions that were taken out are actually being converted to these two OTR positions. They've been taken out of the base budget and basically put into to one time that are not slated to be refilled. Although we may have some discussion on one of them later on. The systems manager position is that one would be difficult to leave to just one person. We'll bring that up again next year.
Well, this makes me a little worried. It sounds like there's a lot of hope involved, a lot of depending upon people to do extraordinary things, and that's not really sustainable. I mean, I know you want to make Jason look good and all with the budget, but I'm really serious. Is this, like, you're down one dispatcher, you're asking the comm center manager to be a super person. Maybe I'll talk with you guys and Jason and sort of figure out what's really, is this a reasonable hole to create in this department?
It could bear, we'd certainly be open to more discussion on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's taken a long time to build this department up to feeling really confident about how things are running, and I'd hate to jeopardize that. So, all right. Is there any other discussion or any other questions from folks? All right. Thank you both very, very much. And keep on keeping on. It's a big job you have there.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
We can now go to probation and community justice. We had ended the previous department a bit early, and Dan Cornell is with us now. Hi, Dan. And if you can turn to page 153 in section 4, that gets you to probation.
How are you tonight?
Great. How are you, Dan?
Fine, thank you. I apologize for not being prepared when you were ready for me.
No, we were like 20 minutes early. Now we're probably 20 minutes late. I'm not sure, but.
So. Sorry. I'm joined by my administrative services coordinator, Laurel Rockhill, and deputy director, Carla Brackett, who are behind me in the distance, socially distancing.
Welcome. Hello.
So, I believe our slides were sent over. We were able to achieve a almost 11% reduction in our budget this year. That essentially is because, am I supposed to put our slides up or does someone else put them up?
Does Kevin have them or?
I can do it if you'd like, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Faced with a 12% reduction scenario, being at more than 90% of our budget is salaries and fringes, it left us no choice really than to contract a little bit. And we wound up being able to accomplish this with the reduction of 4 positions. And a total cost savings to the county of $329,654, which reduces our budget from 3.8 million to 3.5, essentially 3.488. So our full-time equivalents are reduced from 36 in 2020 to 32 in 2021. 11% change in staffing, a reduction in staffing with a loss of 4 people. That includes 2 PO titles. One was vacant, put in our 2021 budget in anticipation of 17-year-olds coming on board to raise the age. The numbers of raise the age youth did not justify us filling that position, so that was an easy pick. We also chose to eliminate 1 criminal court probation officer position. That position had been vacant for some time, had been filled with some time, but the person in that title had not been able to work for a little bit. So we'd already redistributed that caseload among the existing staff with no ill impact on our ability to perform the jobs. So when that person decided to take an early retirement, we decided to add that to our budget and not seek to fill that spot. The third position that we're cutting is a admin assistant 3 title. We had 2 admin 3s on staff. We were able to consolidate the workload amongst the remaining administrative staff and continue to perform our duties and get work done in a timely fashion. The fourth position was our workforce development specialist position, housed in our day reporting program. That was probably the most difficult decision because that one had the most impact on service delivery. So, but that decision was made because the services are duplicated in the community, essentially. We'll be able to refer people out to Tompkins Workforce, New York, Challenge, other services in the community that can meet that need. Also, internally, we can do some things that they're reporting with existing staff to help people with resumes, find job resources, employment resources, job boards and things of that nature. We also have our interactive journaling, which has an employment piece to it. And we're going to be discussing, we haven't done this yet, but we're going to be discussing, talking with our Cornell Cooperative Extension partners if they could add an employment component to the classes that they already teach. So those are the four positions. There's my explanation, the major influences. Again, elimination of the full-time position for raise the age, the full-time probation officer position that we'd already redistributed, and workforce specialist position in admin 3, along with the rationale for why I chose to cut those titles.
That's all right. Thanks very much, Dan and Laura and Carla.
You're welcome.
Questions? There must be questions.
Arthur, I lost 2 nights of sleep. Somebody ask a question.
All right. Arthur. Mike Lane.
Just wondering about your caseload, Dan, for your officers and their heard assigned counsels down a little bit in some of the cases they're doing. Are your caseloads down? What are you seeing?
Yes, there's definitely, thanks for asking the question. There's definitely been a reduction since January. We had 549 adult criminal court cases at that time. We were anticipating bail reform was going to be our biggest challenge for 2020, but we all know that COVID sort of took precedence over that. So we can't really tell. We're down now, as of today, to 473, so it's a reduction of 76 adult criminal court probationers right now. So it's essentially two caseloads, which mirrors fairly well with what we're proposing to cut as far as two PO titles. I think things will go back up as the courts, you know, resume functioning, but I don't know how to explain what impact bail reform has had and what impact COVID has had. So until COVID is a thing of the past, or at least not as serious a thing as it is now, I don't think we'll really know what the full impact of bail reform has been. But the trend has always been, has been downward for several years, but certainly not as aggressive of a reduction as we've experienced this year.
And the caseload for your officers, where is that compared to what is recommended nationally, for example?
Well, it's interesting that you ask. There really is no national recommendation. I was looking at the American Probation and Parole Association. They've tried to nail down what the perfect number of probation cases is per officer, and there's so many variables that it's tough to do. But we're in the low 40s and below per officer, which is pretty manageable. I've heard people bat around the number 45 to 50. We're certainly better off than most of our contiguous county probation departments as far as having the luxury of manageable caseload sizes. So I feel that officers are in pretty good shape with the caseloads that they have at the moment.
Thank you.
If you average it out, with the number of probation officers that we have and the number of adult criminal court clients, the mathematical average is 39.41 per person. Structurally, internally, it varies a little bit because the higher risk caseloads tend to have a few less people on them, and the lower risk caseloads and medium risk caseloads tend to have a few more because of the labor intensity of working with that specific population that POs are working with.
Deborah Dawson?
Yeah, I don't have a question, but I do want to thank Dan for making some difficult and thoughtful decisions and explaining them so well and being such a good team player. You know, yay for you. You reduced your budget by about 12%, and you have no OTRs, and if we had a prize, we'd give it to you.
Well, thank you very much. Give it to Laurel. She crunched all the numbers and told me what my tough choices were.
Thanks. Giving out prizes. Thanks, Deborah. Appreciate that. Jason,
you're here. I just want to say one thing, you know, and commend Dan and the probation department. They, during COVID, they made some drastic changes. They took on furloughs. They redistributed staff where needed. They really played a multifaceted role throughout the whole past several months. So I want to commend him and Carla and the team for all that they did, you know, trying to make things work, and being a team player. So I think they did a great job. Now they're getting things backed up and running. I stopped by day reporting the other day just to see how things were going and how they're adjusting. And I think it'll take a little bit more time for the courts to get up and running again. But, I just commend them for doing a good job and trying to step in when needed and where needed.
Thank you.
So relative to that, I'll ask a question that has come up before. So you consolidated the administrative assistance work into the two others that you have. Did you say that person was retiring?
Not the administrative assistant title. That's an actual employee that we had to cut from the budget and who was offered another position within the county.
Okay. And the workforce specialist too?
That person decided to accept the early retirement.
Okay.
So if the position is reinstated into the budget, then we would have to hire a new person.
Okay. Very good. So that's an example of that working, of the early retirement really giving us some flexibility. All right. Anything else for Dan and his team? Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your being here and have a good evening.
Thank you very much, you too.
All right. This brings us to the Sheriff's Department, including the jail. So I see Sheriff Osborne and Under Sheriff Olin.
Yep.
And,
hi, everybody. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. And so we start with 168 in your book, Section 4.
All right. Yeah, we'll get started with the jail because that's probably the quicker and easier one, hopefully.
That's page 174.
Can you guys see the screen?
Yes.
Okay. That was my first time sharing the screen, so success.
Well done. Well done.
Go ahead to the next one. Yeah, on the jail side, you can see the percentage we cut, and you can see it in your budget book. We have a little less flexibility on the jail side than we did on law enforcement and our civil. Basically, what you see there is our revenue, which pretty much we're hoping will stay about the same. That comes down to our phone commissions. As you know, we cut those pretty drastically through renegotiating with GTL this past year. But the positive thing is what we negotiated out was their commission, so we're hoping that should stay about the same, although we may see a slight decrease due to inmate counts being lower. It also includes our MAC grants, tablet commissions that we may see. As you know, we added tablets to the jail for inmate use. Much of the stuff on there is free, but if they decide to use some of it for visitation to play games and things of that nature, there is a small fee associated with that. It also includes our tower projects. When the phone service provider comes and works on our tower that's on our property, we provide security and we usually receive some revenue from that. The biggest changes you'll see is our second nurse position in the jail. We have been budgeted for two full-time nursing positions. This year, we've only ran on one. We had some problems filling the second one initially, and then we felt like we didn't necessarily need it for a while because our inmate numbers were so low. I know that sounds bad, and the county worked hard to have two nurses, to have one on at all times. But again, with the inmate numbers being as low as they have, we've been able to make do with that. And plus, we do have a second per diem nurse that we have a contract with that can fill in when we need to. So as bad as it sounds, so far it has been working for us. And although a tough cut, we have been getting along without it all year as it is. We also had some cuts in our sergeant overtime in the jail. Some from our equipment line, prisoner clothing, and our fuel. That makes up the majority of our cuts. Next slide. Again, this is just our FTEs for the jail. That just simply reflects the loss of the second nurse. And that's really about it for the jail. Do you have anything to add, John?
No, I think you touched on everything. Our per diem contract with Evelyn Goldsberry, who was previously our full-time nurse, has worked out well for us. When our current nurse has been on vacation, Evelyn has stepped in and filled that role. She also continues to do our CPR and AED and first aid training for us.
I will add that with our low inmate counts, I know Matt mentioned it earlier, but we have been in the low 30s quite recently. I've considered asking Commission of Corrections for a staffing analysis, although I'm a little hesitant because that is risky. For those of you that were around last time one was done, they came back with a crazy number of COs that they said we needed, and then the county and previous sheriff had to spend a lot of time renegotiating that and getting the number down. So that's a give and take. We have been able to close one section of the jail and consolidate the few remaining inmates we do have. But unfortunately, with the design of our jail and the generous disability plan we provide in the county, we haven't really been able to affect a reduction in staff on that side. Any questions on that?
Yeah, sure. I wasn't sure if you're done. Okay, Shauna Black.
Hello. I had a question in regards to the CO unions and wanted to see, even if the numbers were decreased by the DOC, is there something in our union contract that states we have to have certain staffing ratios?
Not on the jail side. That is the how it happens on the road patrol side. But on the jail side, our staffing is strictly determined by what the Commission of Corrections states.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't see any other hands. So that's interesting about you've actually been able to close one section. And how long have you been able to keep that closed?
That's been hit or miss. We shut it down a couple times probably in the last several months and then found we had to reopen it. But it's been closed down. What, maybe a week or two?
Yeah, a week or two.
Yeah, so not a significant amount of time, but we're trying to make it permanent if we can.
It stemmed from, our junior corrections officers get forced for a lot of overtime. We actually, our junior CO normally works on average 130 hours in a two-week period, and this person actually suffered a panic attack in the morning when we had to take them to the hospital. So we take it upon ourselves to try to reduce overtime as much as we possibly can. One solution we came up with is trying to shut down a wing that way so many people aren't getting forced. So in our public safety reports, you might see one or two board outs. We've had to board out one to two people to maintain us shutting down a post. So that's where those numbers come from. We felt like it was important to keep the staff we have healthy. And that was the best option we can come up with, so since we're not getting any flexibility from the commission.
Yeah, to Shauna's question, that is something that is in the union contract about who gets forced, being the less senior. And unfortunately, until we can get that changed, or if we can get that changed, the junior people in corrections have to work in a huge amount of overtime. And it hurts us in retaining staff and keeping them motivated for sure.
Thank you, Leslie.
So, Jen, thank you for that explanation. It answers most of my questions. One follow-up is, if The jail population has been relatively low, so I assume that that helps with being able to shut it down. But in terms of classification, is that where you're seeing where we have to board out, or is this when we have a few extra numbers?
The classification will always play a point. So it doesn't necessarily, we don't board out certain classifications over another. It just depends on, like right now we have our dorms shut, so we have max and medium open. Last week we had our dorms open and our max post shut, so we're very conscious of what classifications we have, and we make the determination on who's eligible to board out based on that. And we also take into consideration what the likelihood of how long they're going to be in our jail. We don't want to board someone out and then the next day they're getting released from our custody anyway. So there's a lot of moving parts that come into making that decision.
So may I ask a quick follow-up? If I just heard you correct, there's not one section that's just closed off all the time. It sounds like it varies.
It varies depending on how many female inmates we have. It varies on what classifications we have. Right now, we're on the dorms, and we have a standing border with Tioga County, so that's where we've been boarding out, so we try to keep it relatively local.
And since I have to ask a question, thank you all so much for coming up with the idea for trying your best to support employees' mental health. That was your idea, right?
Yes, we also, historically, the two sergeants haven't been counted towards minimum coverage. We were able to negotiate with the sergeants. So now when there's two on, we count one of them as coverage. So that has also helped us with our overtime.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions? It does seem like, sort of tracking how we do with closing one section or another, maybe over a period of a little bit longer time is going to be what we need to be confident about bringing the commission in. And there may be, have you checked with other sheriffs to see whether has anybody else asked for a reevaluation yet?
Not that I know of, no.
I know there was a lot of talk at the beginning of the year when bail reform was just coming in, and a lot of places had population go down, inmate population go down. There was a lot of talk about having CDC reevaluate, but the sense is we have to wait and see a little bit longer.
So. I agree.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You want to go to the law enforcement side?
Can you see that one?
Yes. Good.
Go ahead. Go right to the next screen. This is for our civil and road patrol functions mainly. This one was much more difficult to come up with the cuts that were asked of us. We tried to make it easier and list each unit and or division and where we cut. From our civil division, we cut over $11,000. Stop DWI, if you recall, last year, that position transferred to the sheriff's office. Unfortunately, we didn't even get that person set up before COVID hit and furloughs started happening. So it was a relatively easy position for us to give up because we hadn't gotten used to even half of it yet, unfortunately. SWAT, we cut 6,000. Our road patrol, 367 plus thousand. You'll see the figures in white. Those are what our over target requests are in one times. I'll just let you look at that for a minute and we'll move on.
And that's cut to our SWAT budget is a 50% cut to that unit.
Right. This just reflects the one position being lost, the two positions. Let me back up. 2020, we added the two deputies. If you recall, we initially came in to the budget process seeking six positions, working with county admin. We thought it was reasonable to do two new deputies. One was funded through our own budget through cost savings, reductions in overtime, and things of that nature. The legislature approved the funding of a second position and then the move of the stop DWI position. So we're asking for an over target to get those two deputies back. You can go to the next slide. That's the start of our two over target. I'm really concerned about those deputy positions. I felt like we just started to get some movement last year and get those two positions approved and filled. Unfortunately, you know, it's taken some time to get them up and running. We hired two positions. They're in the academy right now and just starting their FTO process. And plus being down other staffing due to disability retirements that the state's been taking a couple of years to process, we've actually been kind of hurting. I just hate to see us go backwards with our deputies. We really can't afford to take a hit in this area. I think, you know, the community outreach we talked about last year during budget has really paid off for us. You know, in regards to what IPD is facing right now, I think the community has been relatively happy with the work we've been doing, and I hate to see that go backwards. We also are just continuing to see increases in areas. Raise the Age has hit us really hard. We're now handling all the juveniles for the county as far as transports, and we've actually had one for over 24 hours sitting in our office from an IPD arrest, and it looks like we're going to have that juvenile in our care for another 24 hours sitting in our office spending the night on the floor. It's just a horrible situation. I think that's it. The second one is our vehicles. I understand that cutting our vehicles may seem easy on its face because it doesn't impact staffing. But you have to keep in mind, please, that, you know, our vehicles run 24/7. Some of them run 16 hours at a time. We provided a whole list of what every vehicle we own right now at the sheriff's office, what the mileage is. You'll see we have three currently at over 100,000 miles and seven between 70,000 and 99,000 miles. If we don't get the OTR for those vehicles, we're just going to revert back to where we were several years ago. The county has worked several years to get these vehicles up to where they need to be and to provide us a really good replacement schedule. I'm just afraid if we start going backwards and get out of that replacement schedule, we're just going to pay for it later. We probably need at least seven vehicles next year just to get back into that rotation. So I'm just hoping you'll consider that when you look at our OTRs. What's that?
This is the second one.
Oh, okay. Okay. This last one, I'll let Jen talk more about it. We all know that, you know, body cams is something we have to have now. The legislature approved or did a resolution back in 2016, I think it was, for the initial issue or purchase of body cameras. Unfortunately, that didn't include a warranty when they were purchased. There was no planned replacement schedule included. And we've been seeing a huge increase of repairs that we've had to pay for, anywhere between $5,000 and $9,000 a year, I think that's been. Although a lot of money, this will upgrade our body cams. It'll bring in a replacement schedule, a warranty. It'll provide for all our holsters and cartridges that we spend a great deal of money on every year. The cartridges are the part that's actually used on the taser. A lot of those are used just in training. We have to train our deputies, and they have to actually fire so many of them a year just to remain current in their certification. Go ahead, Jen. You got anything else to add on that?
I know there's a lot of data on the screen, and normally don't like to put that much on a PowerPoint, but I thought it was important to show what this contract gets us because it does get us quite a bit, and we did spend a lot of time trying to negotiate a fair price with Axon. this would upgrade all of our body cams and tasers. I'm not quite sure who was able to watch the video that we put together. You saw some issues we had with the redaction. This has better redaction tools as well as better audio so that you could actually hear the person you're talking with and don't hear so much background noise. Another thing it comes with, I don't know if you see, it comes with a signal sidearm unit, which is actually a sensor that goes on the holster of your duty weapon. So when it's drawn, it automatically activates your body camera. I thought that was a really cool feature. It also has that for the taser. So when the taser is drawn, it automatically activates the body camera. I think this will be a good contract for us. That way we don't have to worry about if a body cam breaks, how we're going to pay for it. We're pretty much at the end of our life with our tasers and our body cams. The majority of our deputies have what's called an X26. When it breaks, Axon isn't even servicing anymore, so we're just automatically down a taser. So I think this is really important just for public safety and transparency with the community.
Also our storage.
And also, yes, the storage. When this was first negotiated in 2016, we didn't realize how much data we were going to have to store. So this also comes with unlimited data storage, which our bill was going to go up significantly anyway, because we didn't have unlimited data with the previous contract.
Yeah, we have increased the use of our body cameras. As I may have reported in public safety in the past, we're now recording the back seats of all our cars when we have somebody in the back seat. These are really important not only to us in preventing a great deal of liability, they're also an assurance to our community who appreciates us having these. Anything else? I think that's all we have. You have questions?
All right. Thank you both very, very much. You want to unshare? See, we have Rich John has a question.
Hi, Sheriff. Hi, Undersheriff. I don't see any body armor on that slide. I assume you have a program for replacing body armor as well.
We do. Actually, last year we increased that or created a line for the first time in the jail and road patrol for replacement of body armor. So that is something we have currently in our budget.
Yeah, there's $5,000 annually for replacement of body armor.
Okay, and then the vehicle line. How many vehicles would the $150,000 replace?
With the technology that's required to go in them, around about three.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we wish it was just the price of a car like it used to be, but with all the computer equipment and everything that goes with it, it's insane.
Anyone else? Any other questions? Mike Lane.
Hi, Derek. Jen, wondering about the enforcement of the COVID restrictions and the details that you have there. We get the reports on the number of complaints in which municipalities they're in and who responds to them. And we're seeing that the city does not, city police department does not respond to the ones in the city very often. And I'm wondering what your staffing extra this is costing us and how your staffing compares to what the city staffing is. And are we better equipped to do this than the city police are?
No, we're not. That's the short of it. The problem we ran into was obviously, you know, we all felt we were in a public health crisis, and the city of Ithaca, for a variety of reasons, declined to respond to such calls. I was not comfortable with that. I didn't want to see our county end up with an increase in COVID cases, so we stepped up and took on the calls for the city of Ithaca. I don't have a dollar amount in front of us, but we did have to fill several details on an overtime basis to accommodate those calls. We have since stopped the overtime details and have just been handling them with our routine shift calls. But no, I mean, I believe, according to what I have from the city of Ithaca, they have 69 funded positions that work, road patrol, so to speak. And we have, 26 deputies assigned to road patrol, but plus six sergeants. So, I mean, our budget is drastically less than theirs. Well, actually, it's the same. The clincher is we also run a civil office and a jail, if that tells you anything. So we're definitely not better equipped to handle that, but I think it needed to be done, and I think it led or helped to lead to our reduction in COVID.
What are you hearing from the city as to why they don't want to respond to these cases?
Well, I was given a few reasons. One was logistics. They didn't have the staffing to do it. But the biggest one was they felt like the community did not want law enforcement to respond to such things along with a lot of other types of calls. That was the big one. There was one other, I think. I can't remember what the third one was. There was three reasons, but that was the biggest one.
So, but they don't have a problem with your responding?
No, I think they were, one thing they gave up was the potential that these could escalate into other issues or to a use of force. But, you know, we haven't had one instance with that happening with our deputies. We looked at it as an educational response and instructed our deputies, look, this isn't anything worth fighting over. Go over, collect the information, try to educate them the best you can, and we'll pass the information along to the health department. But we haven't had any issues responding to these type of calls.
Thanks for discussing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike, thanks very much for that question. Jen or Derek, if you could take your screen off so we can see a little bit better. So you said we have 26 deputies and 6 sergeants per all together.
Yes.
And then per... We have 3 shifts in a 24-hour period, so that's doing the math.
Yeah, we have 3 shifts, and you have to take into account when you have time off and, you know, benefit days or vacation, things of that nature, or somebody else sick. You have roughly about half of that working on every day. And how that boils down is do we routinely have 3 to 4 deputies on per shift and 1 to 2 sergeants per shift. That's not a lot to, you know, spread across the whole county.
And we're routinely doing transports for people to go to court, and especially juveniles. Like this yesterday morning, we had to drive out to Buffalo, and it happens to be that this person's still with us in our custody. So a lot of our deputies get tied up just doing simple transports during the day as well.
Yeah, this is probably going to cost us about 60 hours of overtime just to watch this one juvenile.
All right, thank you. Leslin, then Ann, then Shauna.
So the last slide you had up with the OTR for warranties and contracts, it's asking for $82,000 annually, our target. But if I read the slide right, it seems like every 2.5 years is when you are needing to service the equipment. Did I read that right?
So this is a 5-year contract, which would cost $82,000 a year for 5 years, and that includes a warranty throughout that 5 years of all equipment and a replacement at every 2.5 years. So it's not going to cost any extra in 2.5 years, this $82,000 for the 5-year.
For 5 years.
Yes. So
thank you.
At 2.5 years and 5 years, all the equipment will be replaced.
Thank you.
That sounds good. Annie.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, was that a yearly fee, the $82,000. I like that contract in that if you have any broken equipment for whatever reason, then you don't have to pay extra for that. Going just back to the vehicles. So are the vehicles, it said supervisor and deputies, are the vehicles that Derek, you and Jen have included in those vehicles?
We have unmarked cars. Yeah, you'll see there's
11 unmarked cars,
right,
would be included in that.
But we're able to replace those, you know, a lot less frequently because they're not responding to calls quite as much. So they last us quite a bit longer.
So I'm not sure what Jen said. Did you say you have 11 unmarked cars or 2?
11. Ours are included in that. And then what we also have unmarked cars for our criminal investigators.
So those are in addition to the cars you showed?
No, they're included in that.
They're included in that.
Yeah, we have cars, unmarked cars for our lieutenants, Jen and myself, and our investigators.
Okay, so that list was including all of your vehicles?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so, with vehicles getting near 100,000 and over, you know, it's, you certainly don't want to be on a call and have the car break down.
Well, one thing we've seen is not only the increased maintenance costs that we had years ago, when we go to sell them at auction, we get nothing for them, and our revenues hurt as a result.
Right, and in a couple of years, the Tesla trucks will be out, so maybe you can look at that in about 2 years.
We're exploring an electric car for our airport, actually.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Shauna?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you both for being the ones to answer the call to step up and help our community with the COVID situation. You know, I think it's easy for agencies not to answer that call and to ignore it or, pass it to the other agency and point the finger to them. But I think we could really be proud of our Sheriff's Department for understanding the importance and the true health and safety of our constituents. So thank you so much for accepting that challenge. I remember being in the Human Rights Commission and both of you came into one of our meetings and discussed the different mission statement that the Human Rights Commission had started. And Ithaca Police was also invited to that meeting, and we talked about why they weren't responding to COVID. And I think the third reason why the Ithaca Police said that they were not responding is because some of their officers have small children and they couldn't be exposed to COVID. So I just wanted to leave that out there. That was one of the reasons why they said that they didn't feel comfortable responding.
The children of the sheriff's office are much stronger and well equipped, for sure.
Yeah.
They're all above average. Right. Are there any other questions or comments? I had a question about raising age. We just heard from Matt Van Houten or from Dan Cornell about in probation that they had. We had added a probation officer specifically to deal with RTA, and they weren't seeing the numbers. So when you say that the juvenile count has hit you hard, is that, help me understand that. Is that because when you have one, it costs you so much to appropriately handle that person?
Yeah, the problem, first of all, we're not against raise the age. The problem was I don't think anybody prepared to really how to handle it. We don't get them all the time, but when we do, it really hurts us because the sheriff ends up taking custody of that juvenile regardless of where the arrest happened. So we get all the juvenile arrests from the city of Ithaca, the villages and all that. And the problem really comes in with beds. There's not enough beds in the state to take these kids. And everybody kind of washes their hands of it and says, well, they're in the custody of the sheriff. It's his problem. We can't put them in our jail to hold them, so they end up sitting here. They get treated worse than they would if they were actually temporarily housed in our jail and, you know, even if they were, you know, kept separate from the general population. So it really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and even with this particular case, the frustrating part is there are open beds. This person was housed in a secure facility. We drove up to get him to take him to court.
Buffalo.
Our deputies were at the hearing, and they said, oh, by the way, Erie County isn't going to take him back. So we had to get on the phone with DSS. This particular county cited a safety concern. I think that made its way around to other counties, and now all of the other counties are refusing to take him, even though they have open beds. And we'll, by tomorrow morning, we'll have had him in our custody for 48 hours, and us and DSS don't know what to do. There's open beds, and they're refusing to take him. And the frustrating part is we discussed earlier, there's our dorms and our jail are closed. He would be much better off in a dorm area by himself with his own shower and a TV than spending the night on a cot in our CID room. So that's where the frustration comes from.
Yeah. It may come to the point where DSS may end up reaching back out to the judge and seeing if we can look at an ankle monitor or something again, but that's like a last resort. Nobody's really comfortable with that.
Jason?
Yep. This has happened a few times where I think it's a product of the lack of thoughtfulness on the state's implementation of Raise the Age. And this is when this happens, we find very quickly where the cracks are in the system and the cohesiveness of the issue. This has happened once or twice before where no one takes responsibility. The state doesn't act assertively to assist in finding the proper bed. And this isn't a specialized secure detention. It's not even the Raise the Age bed. This is a secure detention bed that we're looking for. So now as the jurisdiction who has to maintain ownership and custody of the individual, we're stuck with a situation with no solution. And it's not due to the lack of effort. So I know Kit has been on the phone for the past, and she briefed me last night on this. We've been trying to work OCFS to find the solution here, and they're not taking any ownership or responsibility. It's an issue that has popped up across the state, and so we're not the only ones dealing with it. It doesn't happen frequently, thankfully, but when it does happen, we don't have a great alternative other than to make the space comfortable for the time being until OCFS either asserts themselves, which they can do. They can assert and say, listen, we're going to free up this bed and require this agency to open the bed, or not. And, there are issues and reasons why electronic monitoring can't be used, and it could be due to the circumstances of the individual, the nature of why they're in custody. And that's a judge and district attorney discussion as to why that may or may not be an option. It's a situation that we're trying to work through, but I know other counties have had the same issue when it comes up, and I don't, it's a partnership that the state has to own in trying to find the solutions to it.
So they're not exerting any authority.
Yeah. With the specialized secure detention beds, it's a different issue. Sometimes it's a capacity or an open, an ability to have beds available. This is not that. This is a secure detention bed. So it's a little different, and we're not getting the cooperation with the state right now.
All right. Thanks for that explanation. I appreciate that. All right. Anything else? Any last words for Derek and Jen or anyone else here? Thank you both very much, and many thanks to all of your staff, your whole team. We really appreciate, as Shauna said, really appreciate what you're what you've taken on and that you're following through. You said you're not really seeing enough complaints now to have an overtime detail on the weekends for the COVID complaints.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think the deputies were kind of getting worn out from doing them, so we started to see less of them signing up for the overtime detail. But luckily, they have gone down, so we've been able to handle them on shift.
Yeah, we only had 5 this last weekend, so we check our staffing every weekend and make a determination, and we feel comfortable that our normal shifts have been able to handle them.
That's great. It's good to know. I will be on WHCU tomorrow morning to update on our budget process, so it's good to have this updated information that I can just weave into what I say. So.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I think that does it for tonight. Again, we are looking at the public forum next Wednesday night. And the next EBC meeting is not till October 13th, so everybody has a little break. I know there's already a list of OTRs that we've seen some email about. I wonder if Kevin would be able to put that list together so we can have in one place, where we stand at this point. That would be helpful.
Do that.
Fine. I'm sorry, Jason, were you going to say something?
Yeah, we can put the list together.
Okay, I understand that tracking sheet is still causing a lot of headaches, so.
Yeah.
Can I ask for a little more guidance? I do keep all the amendments on one list in one place. Are you asking for an email of that? What kind of, what are you looking for?
I think just a, you know, an Excel spreadsheet that shows what you've received so far. You know, what the items are. Some, in some cases, there may be new proposals. Some they are proposed for to restore OTRs that weren't funded, that sort of thing. It'd be great for us to have a sense of where the requests have come in, what requests have come in so far.
Okay.
That has to be, and it doesn't have to be tied into your whole database, which I understand is a, another level of complication. So
I would like glossy 8x10 pictures with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one.
And well, I'll leave it under a pile of garbage.
I want kittens. Kittens.
Kevin, you opened this up for yourself, man.
I did. I'm going
to should have just kept the box closed, man.
Deborah, go sit on the Group W bench, Deborah.
Yeah.
All right. I think Mike Lane has an actual comment or question.
Yeah, a logistical one. Kevin, are we going to have the big 8.5 by 14 sheets with all the over targets on? I think they're very useful when we're going through them at the voting meetings.
I think that's the one that Martha was alluding to technical difficulty with. We asked the software vendor for our budget system to do something different for us this year, and it's complicated the data extraction that our own ITS department has built for us so that we can easily pull out the 2021 OTRs, their dollar amounts, their titles, and arrange those in a spreadsheet. I have a work order into ITS, and I'm hoping to hear that they can fix it easily. If not, I suppose we'll assemble it the old-fashioned way that Joe used to, which was to type the whole thing in by hand. And
I still use my typewriter.
I can ship you the information, Mike, and.
Well, Kevin, that's what I meant about it. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't even have to put all the information, but kind of the OTR number, what department, you know, one line about, you know, community outreach worker and the dollar amount. I can ask for five things: OTR number, department, title, dollar, if it's a time or target.
We can do a makeshift. We can do a makeshift version that will in which we will try to come close to what you've gotten used to.
Thank you, and you know, sorry that this is being such a headache.
Not as sorry as I am.
I'm also curious about the various correction pages that we usually get on, you know, on buff-colored paper, et cetera. Are there haven't been down to the office in weeks, I guess, since I picked up my book. Do we have printed pages in our mailboxes, if that's something people are interested in?
We at Jason's suggestion, we are implementing a once a week dump of material for you so that if you have the opportunity to get out over the weekend, you can swing by and pick up those materials at the courthouse. Ledge Chambers.
You should have said dump. You shouldn't have dump, Kevin. We're right back at the.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, so like at the end of the week, you'll put together whatever has come up during the week. So over the weekend, we might be able to find some update pages. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and the color for this year is pink.
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right, that's great to know. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Saves the staff postage. They're always mailing us lots of stuff these days. So. All right. If there are there any other comments or questions, Dan Klein.
Yeah, say y'all trip down here. There are no corrections on the table except for the capital budget from the first day. So there hasn't been any. If some of you picked that first day's up, there hasn't been any since.
Okay.
Just want to see you trip.
Kathy, you'll be mailing us a. No, not yet. You're not mailing the. Yeah, you'll be mailing the legislature agenda.
Tomorrow morning.
Yeah. is it possible to just include whatever, you know, if somebody's left their, hasn't picked up their stuff yet?
Sure. We can do that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks, Dan. All right. With that, just a reminder that budget will be meeting on budget, capital, and personnel will be meeting on Monday at 3:00. So with that, I'm sure we'll be talking soon. Thanks, everybody, for the evening's meeting. Have a good night.